Okay, we'll go on a little further. Yeah. Oh, the next verse is another one that really, you know, gets to us. Thank you. So this one says, whenever I am with others, I will practice seeing myself as the lowest of all. And from the very depth of my heart, I will respectfully hold others as supreme. What red-blooded American would ever think like that? That's totally against our Constitution. It's totally against our foreign policy. It's totally against this administration, isn't it? Yeah? I mean, I might get arrested for anti, you know, government rhetoric, saying I will practice holding myself as the lowest of all. And they'll probably say, good, because you are the lowest of all and we are the best of all. But, you know, there's a very strong message in this verse. And I have to say that, you know, holding ourselves as the lowest of all, this does not mean having low self-esteem. Okay, repeat. This verse is not encouraging us to hate ourselves. Mm-hmm. It is not encouraging us to have low self-esteem. It's not encouraging us to give up our self-confidence. You know, in fact, anything but that. What it's encouraging us to do is to look at other living beings and see their talents, see them, their beauty, see their inner qualities, respect their good qualities. We don't have to respect their negative qualities, but we can respect their good qualities. And whenever we respect good qualities in anybody, we are opening up ourselves to generate those same good qualities. Okay? So when we respect others, then, you know, yeah, we respect them. We don't have to be number one. Yeah. So we can hold ourselves as the lowest of all in that way. It doesn't mean we're groveling on the dirt. It doesn't mean we look at ourselves as a worm. But it means that we don't feel that in every situation we need to be the most remarkable one that, you know, that gets everybody's attention and that gets their way all the time. Okay? And again, in our culture, you know, we are taught that we should just kind of go out there. I mean, humility is, you know, it barely made it into the American version of the dictionary. Yeah, humility? You know, what's that? Because we're raised to kind of come in and here I am, this is me, and I'm great and I'm wonderful. And, you know, when you do your resume and you go for a job application, you write down all sorts of things. You know, can you do those things? No, it doesn't matter, but you put them down anyway. And when you go in and you're interviewing for your job, I can do this, I can do that. Well, that one I haven't learned yet, but I'm a very quick learner. I have all these computer skills. You know, what that means is you can type. You know, anything else, you go into work the first day and they give you computer stuff and you're going, oh, what do I do? You know, but we have no problem saying, oh, I can do this, I can do that. You know, and we take out our business card and it kind of is like an accordion and it unravels and it has all of our titles and all of our activities. And, you know, when we meet new people, we like to tell them who we are and all our successes and how wonderful we are and blah, 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 blah. Okay? And so the disadvantage of acting that way, okay, of holding ourselves as supreme and other people low, is generally when we act in an arrogant way. Yeah, I think arrogance is a sign of low self-esteem. Think about that one a little bit. Yeah. Why do we act arrogant? What are the situations that we go in and we're like strutting around, here I am? It's a situation where we feel a little bit insecure, isn't it? Yeah. So we do this big fanfare to make ourselves look good because we don't basically feel that good about ourselves. So I think low self-esteem and arrogance go together. I mean, why else do we need to be arrogant if we don't have low self-esteem? If we have reasonable self-esteem, yeah, and we know our good qualities, we also know our bad qualities, because self-esteem doesn't mean you just know your good ones, you know. But we know where we're at. We have some confidence, you know, in our Buddha nature and our ability to learn and to practice. You know, if we have that basic kind of confidence, then we don't need to put ourselves up and make a big deal about ourselves and project this huge image to everybody. Mm-hmm. And His Holiness is one of the people that I see as really practicing that. Yeah. I mean, in so many situations, he's just incredibly humble. When he got the Nobel Peace Prize, when he received it in 1989, he was in Southern California at that time, and I was attending the events that he was at when the news came that he had received the Nobel Peace Prize. And I was so impressed that when he, you know, this word came through, he just kind of dismissed it. Yeah, he walked into the room the next morning and everybody stands up and we're all so excited and applauding and yay, yay, yay. And he's just kind of like, this is nothing, you know, sit down. Let's get on with what we're doing. And he also didn't cancel any of his activities. Yeah? He didn't cancel all the meetings with the quote-unquote small people in order to be with the big people on, you know, national and international television. He was really quite humble about the whole thing. And he was teaching in the States for, you know, some time after that. Every place he went, you know, people were standing up and applauding and giving, you know, standing ovations. And he would just stand there like this and bow to the crowd. How would most of us act if we were in front of a crowd of a few thousand people applauding us? Here I am! You know, put me up higher and I'm going to smile at you and you can keep applauding as long as you want to. Yeah. But that's not the way His Holiness was. And I think that he's able to be that way because he has actual self-confidence. So in my mind, self-confidence and humility go together. Yeah, person who has actual self-confidence can be very humble. Yeah, our teacher at Deer Park, Geshe Zofa, is also an excellent example of that. Incredible humility. Today at our Long Life Puja, it was so sweet. He said, "Oh, you're putting me up, but it's like a donkey wearing a tiger skin." Yeah. Most of us would happily wear the tiger skin and pretend to be a tiger. Yeah. But it's very sweet that way. Yeah. So whenever I'm with others, I will practice seeing myself as the lowest of all, and from the very depth of my heart, I will respectfully hold others as supreme. It's a nice way to practice. It's a very, very nice way to practice. Yeah. And it involves training our mind to see the good qualities in others. And I think that's a very, very important training of the mind. You know? When I say training of the mind, it means we are consciously training our mind to see others' good qualities and to see their virtuous actions and to appreciate those and to rejoice at their own happiness. And this is a very direct antidote to the judgmental mind. Anybody here know the judgmental mind? Yeah? We know the judgmental mind very well. just, you know, just sit anywhere, you know, just go outside the Memorial Union and sit there and watch everybody who walks by and, you know, what's going on in our mind. Judgmental thoughts about people we don't even know. Yeah, that one's too fat, that one's too thin, that one's too short, that one's too tall, that one walks funny, that one looks arrogant, that one looks like they are, you know, are depressed, that one, you know, looks scary, that one looks threatening, you know, that one has an ego problem. And most of our judgmental, you know, our little commentary, our running commentary on people, it's mostly negative thoughts, isn't it? Yeah, about people we don't even know, based on what their body looks like. And yet, we say that we're anti-discrimination. And we don't want to, you know, we don't like all those people who are prejudiced. Okay. But we'll sit here with our little judgmental mind and just judge people right, left, and center, right, left, and center. Yeah. And then we've all become our own little miniature psychologists. Have you if you see that? Yeah, we diagnose people. When we talk about the people that, you know, that we work with, oh, I have a colleague who, you know, is so borderline, they drive me crazy, you know? And my husband's acting in this passive-aggressive manner. I don't know what's wrong with him. And, you know, so-and-so's just psychotic, you know. They don't listen at all. They're dreaming of their own. I mean, we do this. Don't we? We psychoanalyze everybody. Yeah? And diagnose them. I think it's hilarious. You know, this is our judgmental mind. Does our judgmental mind make us happy? No. One of my teachers, Geshe-la Andarge, he used to talk about our judgmental mind. And how we would get together with our friends and talk badly about other people. You know, this is one of our favorite pastimes, isn't it? We get together with somebody else and we go, oh, that person over there. And he used to say, you talk so bad about all these other people. And the conclusion of the conversation is, well, the two of us must be the best people in the whole world. Yeah? And so, you know, we, in our ordinary life, we are training ourselves to see faults in everybody, and then by default, we become the best thing that the world has ever seen. And so that just reinforces all of our self-centeredness again and again and again. Yeah? But it doesn't make us happy, does it? Yeah, the judgmental mind is miserable. It's really painful when all of our thoughts are just thoughts of denigrating others and complaining about others and berating others and belittling others. You know, even though we're trying to, this is the screwy way our ego works, is we're trying to do it so that we feel good about ourselves, but actually putting others down makes us feel rotten. Mm-hmm. And so the whole practice of training our mind, being able to look at other people and see their good qualities and see their fortune and rejoice at their virtuous actions, it's a really wonderful mental training to do. And it's one that you can do anywhere. You can do it when you're standing in line. It's an excellent practice to do when you're stuck in traffic. Yeah? To just sit and think good thoughts about people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's really a quite nice practice. It makes the mind very happy and gives us a feeling of hope and gives us an awareness of the goodness that there is in the world. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we got through two verses. Maybe I'll just read the last six and then we'll have some question and answer. Okay? So in all actions I will examine my mind, and the moment a disturbing attitude arises, endangering myself and others, I will firmly confront and avert it. Whenever I meet a person of bad nature who is overwhelmed by negative energy and intense suffering, Got the picture? I will hold such a rare one dear as if I had found a precious treasure. The opposite of what we want to do, isn't it? When others out of jealousy mistreat me with abuse, slander, and so on, I will practice accepting defeat and offering the victory to them. It's another un-American one. When someone I have benefited and in whom I have placed great trust hurts me very badly, I will practice seeing that person as my supreme teacher. In short, I will offer directly and indirectly every benefit and happiness to all beings, my mothers. I will practice in secret taking upon myself all their harmful actions and sufferings. Without these practices being defiled by the stains of the eight worldly concerns, by perceiving all phenomena as illusory, I will practice without grasping to release all beings from the bondage of the disturbing, unsubdued mind and karma.